Living in a scientific age, we need citizens who know enough about science to make intelligent decisions about what they do. We've used science to prolong life, to increase security and happiness. But it can also be used for destruction. Are we going to use it constructively? It'll be up to you, and you too.
Now you can see everything that I'm reading. It's on the screen up there, and that's not
It'll
normal.
Spoil the show.
It'll totally spoil the show. Did you know yesterday I went shopping at the cherries and microphones store?
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I love that place. And I bought a Bing, bought a boom. I bought a Bing and I bought a boom. Yeah.
That's not bad.
Thanks.
It caught me by surprise. Well, welcome to another episode of the Mark and Toddcast. I'm one of your hosts, Todd Workoven, and joining me, as always, is Mark Middleton. How are you, Mark?
I'm really well.
We are drowning in technology right now.
We are.
We've got some new cameras. We've got lights. We've got Pug Cam. So if you're on the Facebook live stream right now, you are seeing a live thing of Isabella Pug sleeping. And she moved, like, right as we started, pressed record, she got up and moved, and we were terrified she was going to get up and go away, but she just was changing positions. So.
Yep. And so I'm sharing on my page right now, live episode.
All right, well, I'll get the news started while you do that, and we can go from there. I need to make that longer. That's kind of inconsequential sounding. The news on the march. Well, the big news for the past, I think this was announced after last week, even though we didn't have a Mark and Toddcast last week, but the big news everyone's talking about is Amazon buying Whole Foods.
Huge.
For whatever. And I found it interesting because there's an article, now I forget where I get this, but it's titled, Amazon is buying more than Whole Foods, getting 460 stores it can turn into warehouses and showrooms. So By acquiring Whole Foods, Amazon is buying not just the upscale supermarket brand, but a vast distribution of 460 stores worldwide in some of the most affluent zip codes in America. They're complete with back rooms and cold storage, and that's a significant boost because they usually are right now only have 100 distribution centers in the U.S. So some of these statistics about what they're going to be have access to is kind of crazy. So where did this go? In the U.S., this adds 400. So 80%, they're within 10 miles of 80% of the population with this purchase. So this adds 440 refrigerated warehouses within 10 miles of about 80% of the population. More importantly, it puts refrigerated distribution within 10 miles of 95% of their Prime members.
How many stores is that? 400?
460 stores. So this is purporting that it's Whole Foods kind of is just going to be the warehouses. And I don't know if they're saying, well, you can shop there too, but.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the distribution centers. I mean, they're going to have helipads on the top for the drones. And they've also announced, I was hearing on NPR, there's a clothing buying service that they are getting ready to launch as well that they've been testing out in a couple markets. You order, basically you get a wide selection of things. They ship it all to you and you have a week to send stuff you just, back.
Well, I've seen, they're not like loot crate type things, but I've seen different companies that do send you their,
like the buying services.
You know, they're big sponsors of podcasts. So because all the sweaty nerds who listen to podcasts don't know how to dress apparently. So they think they're ripe for the, but yeah. So is it inevitable that Google will just, or not Google,
Amazon.
Well, Google and Amazon will just own everything. I mean, will we have a choice? I guess not own everything, but will we have a choice to not use them?
Well, it is more than five out of every $10 spent on the internet is spent on Amazon. You know, they have and for e-commerce, it's like 9 and 10, like for, outside of subscription,
right.
You know, purchasing of, of online streaming and everything. Yeah, but if you're buying a product, $9 out of $10 are being spent at Amazon. And most of those are by me. Like I
someone gifted, I was telling you this before the show, but somebody gifted me an Amazon gift certificate. And like, I don't even know.
You give it to me.
I was like, I guess I theoretically know how to use it, but I'm like, what do I use it for? And like,
I know.
I'm phobic. I'm phobic for not like, I don't think they're going to steal my information. Like, I don't think anything bad is going to happen. I don't know what it is about me that I just don't like ordering stuff off the internet. I love getting I don't like spending money. And I think it's because
I get a package every day.
I know. And that must be so exciting. But then it's just like a signal of you have spent more money. And like, I hate doing that. Right. And so it's like a celebration of, I don't know, like maybe I don't allow myself nice things. So like, I don't let myself have the joy of having a package show up or something. Uh-huh. That's why I was surprised. I was listening to Not Nerd and they had a contest on their Facebook page. And you'd be crazy not to go visit facebook.com/notnerd and listen to their podcast. But I won a little USB charger deal and they asked my shipping address and I gave it to them. And like the next day, like they're waiting on my porch in the country, just a little wonderful little package with a USB thing in it. And it is pretty magical. But part of the reason they're doing this is that they're not looking back on like cutting back existing avenues of distribution. They're just at capacity with like literally everything, like the USPS and like all these distribution things. They're outgrowing, and so like they have to build their own because they're just so big. I mean, I was gonna say the next Walmart. I mean, they're way bigger than Walmart, but I think we're gonna start seeing the effects.
Are they though?
I don't know. I just feel like they are. I mean, if they're making half of the money on the internet, then.
But Walmart has such a worldwide.
Well, but I was going to say, the point I guess I was making is that I think we're going to start seeing more of the real world consequences of all of our money going through Amazon. And we're going to start seeing that with jobs being replaced and industries being replaced and all that. So it's kind of the same thing what Walmart did to the small town. I think Amazon is going to start to do. On a bigger scale, I say, shaking my fist and yelling at clouds like an old man.
Amazon is significantly bigger than Walmart, Target, Best Buy, Macy's, Kohl's, and Nordstrom combined.
Combined.
Yep. Amazon, $355 billion in market share, and all of those combined together is just under 300.
Jeez Louise. Are they the biggest company on earth? Who would...
Well,
or is that whatever that Alibaba is? I always hear Alibaba. See their name and like it's impenetrable. So I just always skip those articles.
In terms of market share, that's a good question.
And what are they? They're the eBay of the East or whatever. What does Alibaba do?
Alibaba is.
Or are they the Amazon?
They're a distribution channel. They're more like eBay than.
So would you consider Amazon a distribution channel?
Yes.
Yes,
absolutely. 100%. They've got so many fingers in so many pies.
Pies.
Yeah, they are the premier web hosting services. They're like Netflix pays Amazon money for all of their streaming services.
So does the Mark and Todd cast, I believe.
So is the Mark and Todd cast.
Well,
and
it's inevitable. We'll just all be swallowed up. Given our Amazon Prime number tattooed on our forehead. Because we're talking about Amazon. And they had this whole coconut thing too.
The coconut oil.
Health food. Coconut oil scandal that's rocking the internet right now that I was going to read about, but I think I'm just going to skip it. So if you are a coconut oil fan, is that a thing that you had ever heard growing up, like to slather coconut? Like, I know it's a topical stuff like that. Or is that just like there is a big renaissance for like if there's anything wrong with you inside or out, slather it with coconut oil and you'll get better.
I wasn't part of that train. My family was on the aloe train.
Oh, okay.
And so everything was solved with aloe. You can... you can eat it and drink it and put it on burns or skin. Like everything right. was aloe.
It's God's miracle.
God's miracle.
Goo.
Right. And it seems like the yucca plant was also, we didn't use the yucca plant, but like growing up in Southern California, there were yucca all over the place. And there was always like the Native Americans, they used every single part of the yucca plant. And so it was, you know, it was the
sacred yucca,
the sacred elephant of Southern California. And so like, no, you can take the spine at the end of the thing and make a thread. And that is how they sewed things. And the flower is used for medicinal, like every part of the yucca was a magnificent tool
right.
that saved lives and everything. So yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's funny. Yeah, when I was a kid, the only thing that worked for anything was walking it off. Sorry. Anyway, I was talking about, I don't know how we'll have to cut out a little part about the technical difficulty, but I'll say it again that Dave Baylor of the Not Nerd podcast sent us this article because he knows I'm vaguely terrified of what the future holds for us. So an artificial intelligence developed its own non-human language. So at the Facebook Artificial Intelligence Research Lab, they were teaching machines how to negotiate with each other, which is interesting because they said the machines got really good at negotiating and would like feign interest in something so that later it could seem like it was compromising. Are we doing it again?
No.
Oh, okay, sorry.
No, like I'm just
crestfallen realizing what the future has in store for
because
us.
Because it's probably the same AI that created its own encryption algorithm. And so
I don't like that at all.
It was communicating with another machine with an encrypted language that we don't have access to.
See, in this one, it was the two bots were having a conversation.
It's having
in its own non-human language.
It's happening.
It is.
Oh, actively,
we're on our way.
I'm so glad I'm old. Like
a little bit, right? I mean, I want to see the future, like, because it's going to be cool and stuff, but also not sometimes. And we're at a big, maybe it is that we're just old, you know?
Right.
I mean, because, like, the kids I'm around, like, don't fear this, but maybe that's part of the problem.
Exactly.
Their spirits are already broken. Anyway, so...
Well,
just wait for
another picture of the pug sleeping. Okay.
Oh, good. Yeah. This will also bring us joy because the world's largest duck was spotted in Tacoma. A giant rubber duck is hanging out in Tacoma this week. It was the world's largest duck floated up the Foss Waterway as part of the Festival of the Sail Tacoma in Tacoma on Thursday. The duck and more than 20 sailing ships will be featured on the waterfront through June 18. Oh, wait. Are we past June 18? Oh, yeah. So it is a giant and it looks just like the bath, you know, the regular rubber ducky. It is 6 stories tall and it weighs, what did it say? It didn't say what it weighs, but it cost the Canadian government $120,000 to bring the duck around. It's going to end up in Toronto. And like all these people in, there's this quote, "It's an absurd waste of taxpayers' dollar," says this poor Canadian who has to. And then, this is why I say this. It's an absolute waste of taxpayers' dollars. Taxpayer dollars, Rick Nichols says. It's an absolute cluster duck.
Oh.
So maybe he was just saying that so he can work in that pun, but it is Canada's 150th birthday. So the world's largest duck went through Tacoma and it's on their way to
Canada?
Toronto. Yep.
It's 6 stories tall.
It's 6 stories tall. Yeah, and you can Google worlds.
How is it getting to Toronto?
Floating. Wait, maybe it's not going to Toronto because that would be absurd. maybe as my side I was looking at this.
They're putting on a train.
Tacoma and... Oh, no, yeah. The gargantuan yellowbird is headed to Toronto where it helps celebrate Canada's 150th, or maybe they just deflate it.
That could be. Maybe.
Or fill it with helium and walk over there. That would be amazing.
They'll just put it in a gargantuan bathtub and transport that up to Toronto. That'll solve it.
All right. Well, moving on to another terrible idea. A timber high rise is planned in the Pearl District and gets a construction permit. So an 11-story tall timber high rise is planned in the Pearl District and has been approved for construction. A milestone for wood technology that could allow for even taller timber buildings. At 148 feet, the framework building will be the nation's first high-rise building made of wood. Now, I wonder.
But
there had to be someone to like raise their hand and say, research at the Portland State University and the Oregon State University conducted seismic tests to validate the building's structural integrity. Other tests examine the building's ability to maintain its structure during a fire, a key condition to get the permit. Now, the $1.5 million grant from the Department of Agriculture Softwood Lumber Board and the Binational Software Lumber Council helped pay for that testing. So they helped pay for the testing that said this should... Yeah, it'll be fine. Okay. It'll be fine.
So... So I'm all about the merits of the strength to weight ratio of wood.
Yeah.
Like it's...
It checks out.
It checks out.
We did the math before the show.
Right. And the... I just... How are they doing the fire... retardation, like how do they
it doesn't go into any specifics. I did cut out a paragraph about how there's a type of wood that is oddly enough manufactured in Europe, so we're buying a lot of that even though
we're in friggin' Oregon.
Yeah, and the timber industry is apparently having a huge downturn, and I can't figure out
because we buy all the lumber from UK. That's why.
Do you think the numbers of people buying lumber is the same? Because like that's what I thought.
No idea.
Like, how could that be going down? Because it seems like we're still using plenty of wood.
It must just be cheaper somehow to ship it from
halfway across the world through Amazon Prime.
Little just drones taking it over.
Anyway, so yes, look for the timber high rise, looking to set the Pearl District on fire sometime in the future. Some other Northwest stuff. Someone designed a Multnomah Falls Lego set. They're having a contest for consideration of production. So if it gets at least 10,000 votes, it goes to the Lego review board. There's a made up little set. You can Google it. I would use it for the picture, but I think we're going to use Brian's Unipiper Gong Show picture this week.
Yep.
But it's 783 bricks, which makes up the falls, plenty of trees, and the famous Benson footbridge. The creator also did one for Niagara Falls and Yosemite Falls. So you can go vote for his Multnomah Falls if you want to see that become an actual set. So I have a link in the show notes, Mark, from something I stumbled across. And I think I sent this to you on Facebook earlier this week, but I know you're not on Facebook a ton.
Right.
Have you seen this video that is kind of going around?
The Fred Meyer Electronics feed from
1992? Yes. Someone, this is on YouTube, and it's on YouTube. It's called Video Camera Demo Tape. I'll put it in the show notes. And it's described as, my dad bought a video camera in the 90s to record me. He bought the floor model, and it came with the demo tape. My dad reused the tape and recorded over most of it, but here's the part he didn't. So there is about 26 minutes of the video camera, and I think they said it was 1992 is what they're guessing. Fred Meyer, which is a grocery store, electronics store around here in the Northwest.
Yeah.
But they had the camera displays, you know, of here's the video cameras, and they always have them on. So people like even back then in 92 could like. And so it's just 26 minutes of straight feed of the electronics department in Fred Meyer in the early 90s. So there's mall kids walking through, and there's people looking at records still, and there's people looking into the camera and like making faces and walking by. And it's just and it just sounds like this. And I kind of just want to have it looping in the background of my house. Like, here's a guy looking through the record bins and all the employees and, like, the clothes. Some of them look way out of fashion. Some people, since it was so long ago, some of it's coming back again.
Right.
It's just fascinating. So I'll put that up in the show notes. But that was my...
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So that I know that's been going around, but it's... I think
a year, maybe a year and a half ago, we talked about on the show the Kmart overhead tapes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
there were audio tapes in Kmart that that played custom music that they had commissioned, and the ads, the blue light specials,
yeah, blue light specials.
And
wow.
all this stuff. And one of the people that worked there found a cache of those in his basement and has like 20 of them.
Yeah.
And put them all on archive.org, and they're really great as just literal background music.
Yeah.
Because that's
what
they were
for.
Designed to be.
And every once in a while, a blue light special.
Right. It's just like, and the Martha Stewart collection today, it goes into what's for sale, and it's a great little snapshot of nostalgia.
So yeah, that video is pretty great. Before we go to the Unipiper, and I have a couple things I wanted to talk about on the show. Should we talk about the notary?
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about the notary, and then I'll complain about something, and we'll go to the Unipiper to cleanse our palate.
Okay. So,
Last week you came to me and you said, "Did I tell you I'm in the process of becoming a notary?" And it blew my mind, because literally the day before, I independently thought to myself, "I should become a notary." And then you come up and say that, and we had never talked about it.
And so what happened was, maybe several months ago, I was just thinking about what the requirements are to become a notary, and looked them up, and they're trivial. Yeah, just absolutely trivial. And about a month ago, somebody in our office, just on our internal chat channel, just said, "Hey, is anybody a notary? I need to get something notarized." And which totally sparked like everything. And
it opened the door for you.
And I'm like, "Oh, I had thought about it. Now I have confirmation of it." And so literally Saturday morning, I during the weekend, I have a terrible habit of waking up too early. And so I lay in bed and like watch TV or whatever. And this time
it's the Matrix calling.
It's the Matrix calling. And I decided to, go through the training exercise of notary. So what you have to do is you have to watch a series of videos, and it takes just more than an hour. The videos include little exercises that test your comprehension of what was just talked about video.
Sure.
And then you take a 30 question quiz. And that's it. And then that gets shipped off to the Secretary of State. And so
does
all
it
of this
cost anything?
It's $40.
Okay.
And that commission is for 4 years. And
so what is a notary for? What is a notary?
What is a notary? A notary is
like a parody of a market podcast.
It's a person who has sworn an oath and gone through the training to witness and be an official witness to certain things, and mostly signatures. So if you need to have a document, notarized, what that means is you will sign it. I will confirm that it's your signature, and then my stamp and notary seal goes with that signature to say this has been confirmed.
Okay.
And so there's other things that a notary can do. Like if you need to take an oath, you can take the oath in front of me, and then I can sign a document saying
what kind of oath?
I don't know.
My name is Inigo Montoya.
Right. But
I like to picture you're in a crowded restaurant. Is anyone a notary?
I am.
I have an oath.
And So
an oath.
So
So you can.
The stamp has been ordered, and so I've received the commission, and the official notary stamp you can only buy after you receive a commission, which has a certificate that you email to the manufacturer of the stamps.
Okay.
And so it's got
is
all
the stamp included in the $40?
No.
Or is the, oh, how much is the stamp? That's how they get you. Is this a buy the razor, so, sell you the blades type thing?
So it's
by the Stamp Makers Association of America.
So they're done by third party stamp makers, and so there's like you can go to Office Depot and they will do it, but you have to show in order for them to do a notary stamp, they have to receive a certificate, and so. So that's in the mail. And
wow. And so how much does it cost to get something notarized, and how much does that goes to you?
So it's up to me with a maximum of $10 per signature.
Okay.
So if you have four documents that you need to sign, I can charge you up to $40 for that.
So you have to be competitive with the other notaries.
Right.
There's
other things that you can add on. Like I could be a mobile notary that comes to you,
sure,
and then I can charge whatever I want for travel expenses to get to your
You list. Get lunch on the way.
Lunch.
You can be your own Uber Lyft notary.
I'm the notary of Uber.
And I almost caught myself doing it again, but I almost call it Notary Republic.
Notary
Republic. In my head, you're a soldier.
So interestingly, I learned during the training, so Notary Public is what they're called in the United States, but notario publico is a Spanish term, is the Spanish term, which isn't the same thing. A notario publico is a legal, it requires basically to pass the bar, and it's like becoming a lawyer. And so even if I give services in Spanish, I'm not allowed to use the term notario publico because that implies something entirely different in that language. And so that's
interesting. That's, yeah. I'm not fast enough, but I was looking for that. I should isolate it because I feel like it would be used a lot of the soundbite of George W. Bush saying Putin.
Vladimir Putin.
When you said publico, reminds me of Putin. Oh, the simpler times.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to complain about something real fast, then we'll go to the Unipiper. I have a great visual pun that I forgot about that I will save for next time. So you've had to endure me complaining a lot about a couple things specifically.
Chelsea Heath is also a notary, by the way.
Ooh, let's have a notary off.
And Chelsea says stamps start at about $30.
Nice. Thank you. And we're going to have a notary off and outbid each other with ridiculous things to add on to it to get my business. But besides the traffic in Wilsonville, do you remember my trials and tribulations with my chipped credit card?
I remember hearing you drone on about it. I don't remember.
So if you
listen
to the first 65 episodes of the Mark and Todd cast, you'll hear me moan on and on endlessly about the stupid chipped credit cards where they place the chip, where they place it, it gets scratched off. And I am on my second card and it is not only not working. I went to ship something out, one of my notebooks out. And I put the thing in the machine and I've been having trouble and getting it's not working. And it kicked it out twice and then charged me those two times for it when I got home. And I looked, and even though it said like immediately like not working or whatever, and I paid with cash, it charged me both those times.
Well, it captures those funds, but it won't seal that. It won't complete the transaction. So that will come off you
in 10 days, I found out. So thanks for the $22 that I usually live on for 2 days that is being held in Wells Fargo limbo. But it didn't get to the point like there was no PIN. It like wasn't anything. It was just like immediately like your card isn't working. So now I have to order another stupid chipped credit card. And I gave the guy on Wells to give him credit, the poor sap who answered my phone call at Wells Fargo complaining about it. He's like, oh, that's a really good point. So he's on my side, and I'm going to change the world with him.
Perfect.
So with that, we're going to go to the Unipiper, who has exciting, exciting news about his appearance on
the Gong Show. A picture of the pug sleeping next to the Mark and Todd.
And we will be right back.
Hello, Brian.
Hey, Mark.
Is that the Unipiper?
You got me.
Awesome.
Hello, Brian.
Hi.
How are you?
Doing really well. I have had an extremely busy day.
What kind of things are you doing?
I am on the Gong Show press junket.
Oh, Boom. Wow. You're on a junket. So you're just answering phone calls all day and talking to people?
Well, right now, this is my fourth interview, and then I have a fifth later.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, people listening to this on the podcast, but it's 8:30 at night right now.
Yeah, and then tomorrow afternoon, I'm going to be on the news, and then Thursday morning, I'm going to be on the news. It's
wow, truly... and I saw the Oregonian had a little write-up about you being on there. So, yeah. And just to back up for people who might not know, what's happening to you? Why are you doing this?
Oh, that's right. I think last time we spoke, I was still in the not talking phase.
Yes.
So in 2 days' time now, on Thursday night, June 22nd, 10 o'clock on ABC, it is the series premiere of the reboot of The Gong Show.
The Gong Show.
Yes. Yeah, some of you may remember, some of you slightly older than myself.
That would be me, and I remember the Gong Show watching in the late 70s. It was on TV, and our family sat around the living room and watched
people,
the Gong Show.
And people our age, Brian, or my age, I'm still older than you, not to lump you in with anything, but there was the movie made about Chuck Barris, who was the host of the Gong Show, that Chuck Barris wrote an autobiography after the Gong Show went off the air and purported himself to be a spy for the CIA and like assassin or something like
what?
That. And so George Clooney made a movie called Confession. I'll look it up here in a second for sure.
Confessions of the Gong Show host?
Confessions of the Gong Show host. No, about Chuck Barris and about like if that secret was really true. So
Whoa. It's
a really good. Yo, you didn't know that either, Brian?
No, you just blew my mind.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's totally fascinating. So I'll look up. Yeah, you go. Tell us a little bit more about how all that happened, and I'll look up the movie title here.
Sure. So not only am I going to be on The Gong Show as a contestant Thursday, but this is the series premiere, and the Unipiper is going to be the very first contestant. So I am setting the stage for everything that is to come, good or bad.
Wow. So fantastic. That, I mean, and for people who don't know, because I don't think that was when you went down to record that, you didn't know the order and stuff like that, correct?
No, and this was not the first episode that was taped.
That taped.
Either.
So they must feel very strongly about your presence on the show to have it be the first thing out of the gate.
Yes, yes.
And is it... So the host of this show, how are they handling that?
What do you mean, Todd? The host of the show is British comedic legend Tommy Maitland.
Right. And his career has been interesting.
Yes. You should Google it to learn more.
Yeah. So wasn't
he a contemporary of Jiminy Glick?
It looks like he would be... in the exact same the genre and room as him, yes. But yeah, that is an interesting story behind itself, so we'll let people look that up themselves, because that's a kind of a satisfying little rabbit trail.
My lawyer tells me that is a good idea.
Okay, excellent. And the name of that movie is called Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. And yeah, it was a George Clooney's directorial debut, and it was about that. It's really good, so... Do try to look out for it.
Very cool.
So yeah, so you have all the prep, and then that airs Thursday. You said Thursday the 22nd.
Yes,
because you, yeah.
If folks would, you could sit at home and watch it like most Americans. But if you're in Portland, what you should do is come out and watch it with me. I will be hosting nerd trivia night. At Gray Box, and it's going to culminate with a live viewing of the show, and that's going to start at 7:30 on Thursday. And you can find out, you can get a link. You need to RSVP. It is free. There's free food, free beer, free prizes, and of course a free showing. But you do need to RSVP. So the easiest way to do that is just go to unipiper.com, and there's a link right there where you can RSVP.
And I am so bummed that I'm not going to be there. My family takes a vacation every summer, and that just happens to be that I'll be leaving tomorrow. So that's Wednesday, the day before. I was going to try to be like, oh, I'll just leave late, because I thought we were going to leave on Thursday, but I just couldn't swing it. But it looks and sounds like it's going to be amazing. So if those out there are hearing that, you can still go do that on the 22nd.
Yep. Limited seating, but it's going to be a really fun time.
The password is Mark and Toddcast. And if you give that password, then you will get in.
I'm bringing the 12-foot cinema screen and projecting onto there. It's going to be fantastic.
Seven stories above exactly. Portland, looking over the river, looking over downtown. Yep. Oh, I'm so jealous.
Portland classic. That's cool. Besides all the things going on in Gong Show world, anything else going on in Portland?
There's a few things going on. To be honest, I've been so busy, I haven't paid much attention, but I do know the Naked Bike Ride is happening.
Oh, yeah.
This weekend. So if that is if you're curious, or if that is of interest to you, I mentioned Pedalpalooza, I think, last week. This is a Pedalpalooza sponsored event.
Would that make me bike curious?
Yes.
Did you use that joke? I feel like you used that joke before.
No, that's a South Park joke.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it still a secret where it's not a secret where it's happening, because I feel like I read it. Or do they keep that under wraps? Right.
In years past, they've kept the almost all the details secret until the day of. But this year, I saw that the park was announced. I don't know if they announced the route until they.
So some lucky sap's gonna have 4 hours of naked people wheeling by their house all night in a couple nights,
like
I did
3 years ago or whatever it was.
And the Facebook reminded me, he's like, "Remember this video posted?" And I was like,
One thing that is not happening in Portland that I would be remiss if I did not mention, Todd, they are not filming Star Wars Episode 9.
I know a lot of people that got duped, and so like people that I trust to know that, and I didn't get to the bottom of how that happened, but there was a lot of people I think that excitedly jumped on that, and I spread the news too quickly to you to put in your Unipiper segment, and then you quickly found out that was a rumor.
Yes, the internet in true internet fashion let me know with their entire vocabulary that was fake news, or should I say Todd news.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, that's terrible. Oh, I have the
fake news.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
I do have to mention two other events really quickly. Well, one event, and then I have to end with just a story, because I have to get it off of my chest. But those of you listening, by the time this gets posted, it may completely be over. Tonight, Tuesday night, everyone should come down to Dante's. That's where I'm going to be doing my last press stop tour for the evening. The Unipiper and the Cat Rapper are appearing together on Who's the Ross at Dante's at 10 p.m. this evening.
Nice. So I saw that. Who's the Ross? Is that I wasn't familiar with that. What is that? Like the guy's show?
Aaron Ross is a Portland comedian. He's one of the more well-known and definitely prolific comedians in town. He gets around.
Okay.
He is, I think, he has done 700 episodes of his weekly
Holy Toledo.
Show. Yeah, so we're talking more than a decade here that he's been at this, and he is hilarious, and this is one of the probably hidden Portland gems in terms of things to go out to do and experience, especially in nightlife. It's like a $3 charge, and he puts on a whole weekly variety show. He does a news roundup, a monologue, he has musical acts, he has local Portland celebrity guests, and it's really well done.
That's cool.
So something worth checking out.
Nice, nice.
And then lastly, I just have to share the story, because it's been weighing on me. So I'm always looking for little ways to tweak my Unipiper costume and fun things to add. And one of the things that makes the Unipiper, I like to wear sandals when the weather is nice. Particularly, Chaco sandals are my preferred footwear. Chaco this year has introduced a new feature where you can order a custom pair of Chacos with embroidery.
Ooh.
And they will embroider words on the back heel of your sandals. So on one sandal, I ordered a pair and I had the words keep. And then on the other foot, it says weird. My sandals arrived. I got the shipping notification, everything, and I opened them. And lo and behold, they misspelled weird.
Ooh.
So I, of course, filled out a form, return form, blah, 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 sent them back, and even included a photo of my mock-up, which I was worried that I had...
Right, you spelled it wrong.
But no, I was definitely correct. And they're like, oh, we're sorry, we'll fix that. And then so today I get a phone call from, like, the production line. And they're like, yeah, we got your sandals. We want to fix them, but we're just not sure what you want fixed. And they had absolutely no idea that it was spelled wrong.
Oh,
it was
my.
Probably the same person who messed it up to start with.
Yeah. Oh, that is so funny. Keep Portland wired.
Yeah. So now I know how Mr. Yankovic must feel.
Ah, that's hilarious.
I must have a boatload of MP3s from the days of Napster where Weird Al is misspelled. Like
yeah.
That.
Oh, my gosh. Napster and LimeWire gave your computer cancer every time you tried to open it.
All right, guys. Well, I have to get going. I have to go.
Oh, yes, yes. You're on the junket. I'm sorry. Yes. Well, thank you.
Cat rapper and make our big show debut at Dante's.
Excellent. Excellent. Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing part of your junket with the Mark and Todd cast.
Of course. Of course. You guys would have had an exclusive, but I think last week we did Portland at the Movies.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, we still had the exclusive then. So you heard it here first, kind of tangentially. So, all right. Good luck, Brian, tonight. We'll talk to you later.
Okay. Thanks,
all right,
guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Am I the only one where the chuffing of this is like the most infectious thing in the world? The little train horn chuff noise. It should be in every song. It makes you bounce.
I know.
It should be a dance. I should make a dance remix of this. But
nope.
No. But we get to play this music because what are we talking about today, Mark?
Today we're talking about trains. I'm a fan of trains. And not an Uber fan, like a super fan. There's definitely super fans of trains that can, name off the different
models,
engines,
and styles,
history. And I really respect those people, but I'm not that.
You don't self-identify as.
But my office is like 12 feet from the train track.
It literally is.
And we happen to be on the 7th floor, so it's not right outside of our window, but it is loud.
It is loud. And I didn't live as closely, but I lived in a house that was maybe 100 yards away from where the railroad crossed the road and kind of crisscrossed each other. It was in North Portland.
Oh yeah.
And those train whistles are unbelievably loud.
It's incredible.
And it never ceased to surprise me every night at 3 a.m. when they would blow them off for 5 minutes as they slowly cross. Cause you're by the crossing too.
Yeah.
So they have to do it the whole time.
Well, there's 6 crossings by our office as each of those little streets. And so they have to do a loud blast and a short blast and a loud blast and a short blast for each of the crossings. And it's unbelievable. But there's some interesting, sciencey stuff around trains and so I wanted to look it up and find a little more information. And let's see, a couple little bits of trivia. So, the first true railway that was self-powered, that wasn't powered by horses and had 2 tracks and was fully self-powered. It was 30 miles long. What year do you think that was?
Prior to this, you said that wasn't pulled by a horse.
Correct.
Previously, did they have things on a railroad-esque track that was just pulled by a horse? So yes. That part existed already?
Yes.
Okay. And so powered by itself, I would say 1842.
Oh, close. 1830. Same,
oh, wow.
Same year as the original Book of Mormon.
Which is how we famously note the year, whatever that was, 1830.
I do know it as the 1830 Book of Mormon.
That's funny.
Because the 1830 Book of Mormon has 1,500 differences from today's Book of Mormon. It's been rewritten.
Yeah, well, because spoilers, Joseph Smith used to like name his wife in the proclamation, and he was like, God told me specifically for you to be quiet. Thus saith the Lord. So I think that had to edit some
weird,
of that out.
Weird transition. But
anyway,
sorry,
trains.
Transit. Trains. So the Liverpool and Manchester Railway, the L&MR, was a railway opened on the 15th of September, 1830, between the towns of Lincolnshire and Liverpool and Manchester in the United Kingdom. It was the first railway to rely exclusively on steam power, no horse-drawn traffic permitted at any time, entirely double track throughout the length, first to have a signaling system, first to be fully timetabled, and the first to be powered entirely by its own motive power, and the first one to carry mail.
Was this a cargo train specifically, or did it have passenger?
Passenger and freight.
Okay.
And so it was used to transport mail and everything, but it had passengers as well.
Interesting.
So
did trolley? Well, probably not, because trolleys would be electric. So they didn't exist yet for like another 100 years or whatever.
Exactly.
Interesting.
And but the cable cars in San Francisco.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, they had the.
That's crazy. I mean, I know.
Cable cars?
Yes.
They're crazy.
Yeah. Anyway, that's another subject for another day.
So two words that as I was going through things, I thought these words were awesome. And so super elevation. What do you think super elevation means in terms of
when
trains?
It comes to trains, super elevation. Is it a verb or a noun?
It is...
I guess verb would make sense.
Adjective?
Is it a gerund?
it's an adjective.
Is it a noun disguised as a verb? Super elevation. I would this the size of the train, or in other words, the tallness or the
no, what it
height
is,
of a train.
We'll talk about the physics of turning of a train.
Yeah.
And part of the physics. Coupling of the turning of the train is super elevation, which is the raising of one side of the rails above the other rail. So one rail is higher than the other rail, which causes the train to bank, basically.
Okay.
So because of the enormous weight of trains, any physical movement, you know, is magnified by the weight. And so in order to go around a corner, they bank the train in just slightly so that the weight goes down equally on both rails.
I see.
And they do that by raising the outer rail or lowering the inner rail.
Sure. You
know, just like banking in a racetrack.
Right. Oh, interesting.
And so that's called super elevation.
Super elevation.
And the other term that I loved was the wigwag.
I saw that in the notes. I got very excited. I don't know what it is yet.
So the wigwag, the old-timey crossing signal that goes like this.
Oh, yeah, the ding, 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 ding back and forth.
Swings like a pendulum. That is a wigwag.
That's a wigwag.
Yeah, so now you know.
They don't really have those anymore, do they? Now they just have the two lights, I guess, that go back
lights,
and forth.
They go back and forth.
Oh.
And you can find them in very rural areas. The ones that have crossing gates or the gates, that's all based on the speed limit of the train in that area. So if a train can exceed 30 miles an hour in an area, then it has to have a gate. And so all new railroad crossings should have gates, but they're required if a train can be going more than 30 miles an hour in that little zone.
Huh.
Have you ever heard of the?
Have you seen this? Have you heard of this?
Have you seen it, seen this? The crew change guide. So, one of the things that trains are unique, the unique situation that we have with trains is there's a tremendous amount of hazardous materials that are transported on trains.
Yes.
Things like a pressurized container of chlorine gas. And you think about that is going through and near downtown Portland.
Right.
And if that were to rupture, the Department of Homeland Security estimates that in really dense populated areas, the worst death quantity would be up to 15,000 to 17,000 people could die because of
ruptured
leakage
chlorine
of,
leakage. And exactly. Well, down in up here in Oregon, on the Columbia River, they had, what was that, oil that, an
exactly.
oil tanker that spilled over in a, yep. in a neighborhood, basically. That
exactly. And you don't think about like how...
We get chemicals here and there.
You get chemicals here and there. There's virtually no security. Like, you know, once they pull it up and park it, you can walk right up to it.
And spray graffiti all over it.
And spray graffiti all over it. And so the only kind of security measure that the railway does provide is the timetables and the when a certain train will be at a certain place is virtually top secret.
Huh.
And so they don't publish any kind of freight train timetables. So
interesting.
Train hoppers have created an underground system.
Oh, that's awesome.
Of the timetables. And so it's called
a hop a train.
It's called a crew change guide.
Okay.
And you can download it off of the internet, and I did. And so it's the one from 2015.
Don't take no terrorists that can easily circumvent right. the things that we're using to
but
not
it's
die.
Incredibly detailed, and it's got just all of the...
Oh my
gosh,
that's tiny print.
It's tiny print, and you know I could print it off bigger and everything.
Right.
There's three more pages
out
there.
Yeah, here's Wisconsin, and here's Washington, D.C., West Virginia. Oh, so each state has...
Has all their guides, and so the crew change guide is... Trains will go to a certain location and then stop and change out the crew. And this is the schedule and locations for when that happens, because that is where you are going to be able to hop on or hop off a train.
Right. Oh, wow. And yeah, this is a Coltrane staging area. Wow. And this is like super detailed too.
Oh, yeah.
Of like what the patterns of, that's kind of scary though. This one, the furthest you can go in the Pond River one is to Lick Road, which is south of Rock Lick. And they have websites that you can refer to. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so, this one's 2 years old, so it doesn't have all of the newest information, but, they're out there and, you may or may not be able to download them from, you know,
quite easily, astonishingly,
the Pirate Bay, and so those are out there.
So I've always wanted to hop a train and just yes. go take it somewhere.
Do you watch the videos? So there's
a slow train.
No. Oh. It's slow train videos is great, but there's train hopping videos.
No. I'm always afraid I'd be that guy though, that gets taken under the train and gets their legs lopped off because there's a moron who can't jump into the train.
Well, if you use your
then you can jump. I know, but part of hopping a train, you can't. Come on, if you're hopping
you
a train, you can't do
fast.
It when it's standing still.
Well,
you have to hop
can.
The train by like running beside it, and like you're putting the one hand on the latch while the other person pulls you up dramatically right before. You can't just walk up to a train and get it. What's the point of hopping a train if you're gonna do it that way?
So there's train hopping videos on Reddit that I've watched that are very, very interesting. You know, they're done by, you know, people who will travel 1,200 miles on freight trains, and they've used the schedules, they know where they're going and generally, and then, you know, are talking about how once they get to a destination, like what their plan right. is from there, because, you know, if you've just got your
seventh, I saw like food, like McDonald's is near this and this on that little sheet that you gave
me. And so it's its own community. It's absolutely illegal and you should absolutely never do it.
Right. Because you will be the one that falls beneath the train and it takes off your legs.
It takes off your legs or you will be arrested. It is, you know, you're trespassing and, you know, violating the law.
Yeah.
And it gets into issues of national security because right. you might be a terrorist that is going to release chlorine gas on, you know, the city of Portland. And so
don't do that.
Don't do that.
Stop.
Stop.
Please.
And
it all reminds me of the beginning of The Journey of Natty Gann when the dad has to hop the train to get, do you remember that movie?
No.
Oh my gosh. You don't remember that? It was a, I'm very excited about The Journey of Natty Gann. It was an ABC Family movie. And I don't know if it was made for TV, but it was about, it took place in the Great Depression. And this dad, I think his wife had died or whatever. So he was living with this like 12-year-old girl and dad loses his job or whatever. The only place that he can find a job is all the way across the country in Oregon. So he travels out to Oregon to get a job and leaves the 12-year-old girl behind. So the 12-year-old girl ends up in an orphanage that's terrible or whatever and has to escape, and she hops a train and meets John Cusack, young John Cusack, and they travel and a wolf. She befriends a wolf and they travel all across the country.
That sounds together. Familiar. I might have seen
it came out in the early 80s.
Yeah.
The Journey of Natty Gann. And it still holds up. I showed it to a bunch of kids and they liked it.
Huh. let's talk about train turning. So,
yeah.
So if you've ever looked close at a train, the trucks of the train, the axle with the wheels, each axle with two wheels weighs about 2,000 pounds. So about a ton for two wheels and an axle. So you've got 2 tons of wheels. And the wheels don't pivot. They are fixed.
Stationary, fixed.
And they have a distance between them from the front to the back of the of that car. When a train goes around a corner, there isn't slippage of those wheels. You would think that, you know, because the inner wheel has to travel a shorter distance than the outer wheel, you would think that, you know, one of those are going to have to slip, or you can pivot them so that it turns with the vehicle. There's some geniuses that invented the elegant structure of how trains turn that cause it to not slip. So how does it do it? Each of the wheels, instead of being flat, they are slanted so that the inside of the wheel has a larger diameter.
It's got a lip on one side of it.
It's more than just a lip. They're angled.
I feel like you're trying to sell them to me.
I know. It's more than a lip. They're angled such that the at an extreme level, basically, they're a cone, if you will.
Okay.
So the out edge of the wheels have a smaller diameter than the inside edge of the wheels. So as the train car goes around the corner, what happens is instead of the wheels being centered on the tracks, they will go basically up on the edge so that the inside wheel is turning on the smaller diameter area
right.
of the wheel, and the outside wheel is spinning on the larger diameter part of the wheel. And so I made a little, didn't make this graphic, but I
whipped up this animated GIF that is going to be coming up here.
Yeah. And so it's,
I always figured cause I've noticed that I was going to say train wheels do have what I just thought was a little lip like that. And I just thought it was so it didn't fall off the track.
So this is
okay.
An exaggerated view of what that would look like. And so when you see the fat version of the tires, right. Of the wheels.
Oh, I see.
When it goes around the corner, the smaller diameter stays on the inside and the larger diameter stays on the outside of the turn. And that way the wheels stay fixed. They don't turn at all. You have even wear on both rails, so you don't get slippage and uneven wear.
Uh-huh.
And then you've got a little bit of super elevation that helps with the distribution of weight with that. So,
wow.
There's a lot going on, and it's really technically built elegantly.
Yeah.
Like it's a really elegant design.
So if you think of like a wash, like, you know, the old wash tubs that you would put out in your yard, that shape,
yeah,
on its side is kind of what it is. So yeah. So it doesn't have the lip like I used to, and maybe they used to be different, but
so there is a lip on the inside
just to help grab on there.
Yeah. It keeps the wheel from slipping off of the rail altogether.
Okay.
And so you'll see that over bridges, there's an extra set of rails on the inside of the tracks. So you've got the outside tracks where the wheels are, and then you've got kind of an inside that's it comes to a point at one end. Change the camera so I my hand gestures.
Oh.
So you've got the
you're up on the screen.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Up on the screen. So the there's the outside rails, and then on the inside of the rails there's another set of rails that's kind of shaped like a teardrop.
Yeah.
So that if the train becomes derailed, there's the wheels still catch on another set of rails instead of going over the bridge.
Right.
And
wow.
So
what do you know any of the, I guess I should have asked you this before so I didn't surprise you, but I always wonder, are we still using rail? Not as much as we used to is the wrong question to ask, but it still is like the backbone of a lot of this country are our railways.
It really is. The amount of freight shipped, I don't have numbers,
right.
But the amount of freight shipped across the United States is staggering.
Right.
Freight travel in the United States is much more significant than in Europe, for example.
Yeah.
Because we don't have the waterways that intersect the nation,
yeah,
and we have much larger distances with just a tremendous amount of volume of materials that need to be transported,
yeah,
and so semi trucks handle a good amount of that, but rail really supplements that, and is our core distribution.
So do you think that industry is going to be affected like the trucking/shipping industry is going to be affected by robots and drones? And
it will be affected. It won't have the same impact as the drivers for semi trucks. Yeah.
Okay.
If you look at a train that's a mile long, how many cars of material are there? And you've got one or two engineers that are on that.
I was going to say, how many people does it take to drive a train? Sounds like a joke.
I don't know, but I assume it's two.
Right.
That would be.
It seems like there's a lot of room in that engine.
Right.
To like have a horde of people.
Exactly. And, but if they're doing a crew change, it might just be one person. It might be a one person operation at a time, and then they swap out at crew change time.
Seems like it'd be really cool to be like a long haul train driver.
Yeah, awesome. And probably it loses its novelty pretty quick.
I guess
I don't know. There's a lot of time
wasted in the middle of nowhere. Wow.
You know, go those big trains that go across the desert, and you just they're miles long.
Yeah,
like they're really, really, really.
It is long. Also an astonishing look at power.
It's incredible.
Because it even like driving back and forth to my mom and dad's house in Eastern Washington, where you'll go past the trains that go on the Columbia. I mean, it sounds daft to say, but those are long and there's a lot of stuff on them, and it just keeps going and going and going, and to like be able to drag that is nuts.
Yep.
Wow.
On just those little tiny rails.
On those little tiny rails.
Yay.
Nice. What do you think it is about trains that captures our imagination? Because it is every kid's first and favorite toy are those wooden Thomas the Train things. And that is for every kid. That is the staple of every playroom everywhere, every waiting room they've got. And even adults like to put the thing in the little track and they drive it around. There's just something.
It's gotta be about the track, because the track is kind of a foundational piece that it, you see the same triggered response with those toys where you can draw a track.
Sure.
And the vehicle follows that track. And our brain looks at the track and knows and predicts what's going to happen, but then it does happen. Like kids,
I was reading
a psychology synopsis about why kids like watching the same movie over and over and over and over and over and over and over.
Yeah.
And a lot of it has to do with we as humans, we like the psychology of I'm making a prediction and then I'm going to watch that prediction carry out.
Yeah.
And in a simple cartoon movie, they are able to comprehend and predict what's going to happen and then realize that experience happening that they predicted.
Well, it's the only thing in their life that is predictable.
Exactly.
Like everything else is brand new and
terrifying. And so trains are the same way. Is you, with cars, it's all ad hoc.
Yeah.
But with trains, I'm able to predict what's going to happen here, and then I get to be a part of that experience to make that happen. That's my
interesting.
That's my thought.
That does make a lot of sense.
Huh. Yeah. Good times.
Good for you.
Yay. I think the pug got up. Yeah, she got up and moved the camera around.
Oh, you can see her in the corner though still.
Yeah,
she's smelling the whatever.
She found something.
Oh, she did knock the camera over.
Good times.
Well, thank you for joining us for another episode of the Mark and Toddcast. If you want to go to markandtoddcast.com, you can find the last 87 episodes of our show. So if you didn't have enough about me complaining about credit card when there's stupid chips that scratch off and render them useless and charge you $22 extra at the UPS store that you can't get back for 10 days, you can do that. And get a hold of us too. You can subscribe on iTunes, leave a rating. That really helps. And just let us know that you're listening. And if you want to hear us talk about anything. Other than that, I will probably take you out with some more Thomas the Tank Engine because I just cannot get enough of it. We will see you guys next time. Thanks for listening. This literally goes up for 10 more hours on this YouTube video.
What?
We should just keep it on the podcast so everyone downloads it. What in the... Why is this 6 gigs long?
Oh my gosh.
All right, we'll see you guys later.
Okay, bye-bye.
Oh, hey, look at that. Oh, my friend Jen.